Okay, we got then to the point where what we can say is we're beginning to understand something of what the problem is. And it has to be said, we haven't the foggiest idea of how to deal with it. Well, perhaps we've got something a little bit more than a foggy idea, but it really does matter, I think, that politicians, history teachers, head teachers actually recognise that this is not something that's going to be answered quickly with some quick fix. It's not something that's going to be altered by changing the content of the curriculum rapidly. Because the ideas that are needed to deal with problems of this kind have got to be understood and developed slowly. It'd be much better if actually people were to operate on a system which allowed small-scale trials, pilots and so on to go on and actually monitored what happened. However, we may have some thoughts on this, and all the best of them, I have to say, come from Dennis Schimmel, who's got more experience of doing this sort of thing than anybody else, though we've played with it a little bit down here as well. The crucial criteria, I think, should be that whatever it is, has got to be taught as a rapid overview of the past, regularly revisited. It's no good doing outlines, pools of light in the darkness. If you ask kids what they can remember, a lot of kids, I mean, I really am a very high proportion of the kids in the pilot, could only say the Roman Empire and the First World War. Anything between those? Laughter. Well, no. I can't remember anything else. Now, some, it's true, could interpolate. In year nine, they could interpolate a lot more than they could by the time they were about to leave school. And that includes the historians as well as those who had gone on to do science. They found it very difficult to actually say anything about what they weren't now studying in detail. So we need a shift from a sedimentary model that lays down stuff on stuff, year by year, with a very rapidly taught overview which kids keep coming back to. Probably should be taught in one day, judging by the work that's being done in Leeds at the moment. Anything more than that for the first go just causes confusion. I have to say, incidentally, these questions, you might be thinking, this is a damn difficult question that these kids have been asked to do. I mean, history of Britain in, you know, just off the top of your head or writing down in 4 or 5 pages. It's an alien question. But the issue is, should it be? If kids come away from school not knowing how to think in those terms, then what good has their history education been to them? Because unless they have something they can use, a big picture, it's actually, they'll forget it, just as most of you have forgotten all your chemistry. Or perhaps I shouldn't make that assumption. The other thing is, we should distinguish between a framework and a big picture of the past. By a framework, I'm not talking about a narrative. King lists were a form of framework, not a very good one, but one which we are told over and over again by people living sort of more than 150 years ago were an excellent way of learning history. They're just not a very good framework because they don't actually do enough. But that's perhaps what we ought to think about. We ought to think more in terms of a framework from which pictures, big pictures of the past can be developed, than actually handing on a big picture, because a big picture means a story. And if we already have kids who think the way they do about the past, this is not going to be a good thing, quite apart from issues like shelf life and the fact that it's probably a very unhistorical thing to do anyway. Provided we're also teaching them about what counts as a better or worse story and why some stories are better than others. It must be thematic. It needs to pick out patterns of change then as a framework rather than a narrative. And that allows legitimate simplification because it allows students to explore the impact of markers of change on the story. I'll come back to that in a minute. It's got to encompass different scales. Ideally, they should have a big picture of British history. So a framework should deal with the framework of British history. But also it should fit into a wider human framework because a lot of it simply is totally misleading if it doesn't. And of course, nesting into that can be the depth studies. But the depth studies should test the big picture. We should go back to the big picture every 3 or 4 weeks and say, okay, now you know this about the Tudors. What do you now want to say about the way in which you conceive of British political institutions developing? Big particular ones as required. A progressive structure. It's got to be elaborated and differentiated. It's got to gain in coherence within and between links. And I'll talk about that very briefly in a moment. And it's got to be open and usable. It's got to be tested. And it's got to be capable of being modified as kids learn more history. And they need to distinguish between generalities, generalisations, which are generalisations and are valid as generalisations, but recognise that generalisations are subject, and history is all about this, to 101 exceptions. How could we do it? Well, in the North they've been experimenting with the notion of giving kids two boundary posts to start with, for a particular question like, how has our country been ruled? And giving them markers of change, and also asking them to suggest markers of change. So you might say, okay, who ruled 1500 years ago? And what about now? What kind of ruler was it? What does the ruler rule exactly? Is it the people? Is it the land? Is it a state? Is it a nation? How big an area is ruled? And does size matter? What are the problems? What are the opportunities? What range of tasks do the rulers think it's their job to try to get done? And again, make comparisons at each end of the spectrum. The next step would then be to build in landmarks. And you can play with what kind of landmarks you would need here. And it would depend very much, of course, if you were starting this in Scotland or in England or in Ireland, exactly what the landmarks might be for who ruled. They might actually be very different. The important notion here, I'll skip on for a minute, the important notion here is the notion of markers of change. This allows legitimate simplification for kids, and it allows them to see how stories vary if you ask different questions. If you're asking a question about the big picture of the way in which human beings have learned to get a living, if I can put it in the sort of terms you might use with kids, and you just say, okay, let's look at various stages in human history. What happens if it's a bad year for food? At each of these stages, does it matter? And how does it matter? How many people can be fed and looked after? And so, for each stage, the kids themselves can also suggest, Mark, what happens if you get hungry for each of these things? Does being hungry mean the same sort of thing? What range of food can I get? And the picture changes as you ask those different questions. So what you're building up and keeping coming back to is big patterns of change. Now, as I say, these have to be taught very quickly, and then you come back to them quickly. They could become a deadly desiccated person of history at far too generalised a level if they were all you did. But of course, the whole point is they can't possibly be all you do. They're something that you tackle very quickly and keep coming back to. Depth history goes on as before. Narrative history goes on as before. But we've got to find a way of linking that to the bigger picture without giving this dreadful official history. Allowing kids to use their knowledge of how the discipline works, their understanding of why stories differ, their understanding of what counts as a decent explanation or not, allowing them to use that in thinking about what's going on. This may sound dreadfully pretentious, but again, remember about your knowledge of science. These are not all or nothing understandings. We can actually trace the development of kids' understandings in all sorts of areas. And once we understand that better in connection with these things, we might be able to say more about it. What we do know, for example, is that kids, even coming out of university, tend to think of history as happening in topics. The topics are fixed. I remember thinking, you know, history just came in the Tory reforms and the Whig reforms and so on. It took me a long time, in the latter end of university, to realise that this was just a way of organising things. But if you ask graduate students coming on straight out of college to start teaching, to reorganise their thinking away from the topics in which it turned up, they find it extraordinarily difficult. So we're really asking very difficult things here. We do not understand all the things we need to understand to address these problems. But there are things going on all over the world which might help, as Stuart pointed out before. And I think it's time for me to shut up and let Stuart finish.